Today, we are going to look at the emperor's new clothes. I thought this was a good one. All right, so we're going to read the story. Here we go. Many years ago, there was an emperor who was so very fond of new clothes that he spent all of his money on them. He did not trouble about his soldiers. He did not care to go to the theater. He only went out when he had a chance to show off his new clothes. He had a different suit for each hour of the day. Most kings could be found sitting in council. It was said of the emperor, "He is sitting in his wardrobe." One day, two fellows calling themselves weavers came to town. They said they knew how to weave cloth of the most beautiful colors and patterns. The clothes made from this wonderful cloth would be invisible to everyone who was unfit for the job he held or was too very simple in character. "There must indeed be splendid clothes," thought the emperor. "If I had such a suit, I might at once find out what men in my kingdom are unfit for their job. I would be able to tell the wise men from the foolish. This stuff must be woven for me immediately." He gave large sums of money to both the weavers in order that they might begin their work at once. So the two pretend weavers set up two looms. They worked very busily, though in reality they did nothing at all. They asked for the finest silk and the purest gold threads. They put both into their own knapsacks. Then they pretended to work at the empty looms until late at night. "I should like to know how the weavers are getting on with my cloth," said the emperor to himself one day, when he remembered that a simpleton, or one unfit for his job, would be unable to see the cloth, he began to worry. To be sure, he thought he was safe. However, he would prefer sending someone else to bring him news about the weavers and their work. All the people in the kingdom had heard of the wonderful cloth. All were eager to learn how wise or how foolish their neighbors might be. "I will send my faithful old wise man to the weavers," said the emperor. "He will be best able to see how the cloth looks. He is a man of sense. No one can be better for his job than he is." So the faithful old wise man went into the hall where the thieves were working with all of their might at their empty looms. "What can be the meaning of this?" thought the old man, opening his eyes very wide. "I cannot find the least bit of thread on these looms." However, he did not say his thoughts aloud. The thieves asked him very kindly to be so good as to come nearer their looms. Then they asked him whether the cloth pleased him. They asked whether the colors were not very beautiful. All the time they were pointing to the empty frames. The poor old wise man looked and looked. He could not see anything on the looms for a very good reason. There was nothing there. "What?" he thought again. "Is it possible that I am a fool? I have never thought so myself. No one must know if I am. Can it be that I am unfit for my job? No, the emperor must not know that either. I will never tell that I could not see this stuff." "Well, sir," said one of the weavers, still pretending to work, "you do not say whether the cloth pleases you." "Oh, it is excellent," replied the old wise man, looking at the loom through his spectacles. "This pattern and the colors, yes, I will tell the emperor without delay how very beautiful I think them." "We shall be much obliged to you," said the thieves. Then they named the many colors and described the pattern of the pretended stuff. The old wise man listened with care to their words so he might repeat them to the emperor. The thieves asked for more silk and gold, saying it was necessary to complete what they had begun. Once again, they put all that was given into their knapsacks. They went on working with as much effort as before at their empty looms. The emperor soon sent another man from his court to see how the weavers were getting on. Now he wanted to know if the cloth would be ready soon. It was just the same with this gentleman as with the wise man. First, he looked closely at the looms on all sides. He could see nothing at all but empty frames. "Does this stuff not appear as beautiful to you as it did to my lord, the wise man?" asked the thieves. "I certainly am not stupid," thought the man. It must be that I am not fit for my good job. That is very odd. However, no one shall know anything about it." So he praised the stuff he could not see. He declared that he was happy with both colors and patterns. Indeed, your imperial majesty, he said to the emperor when he returned, the cloth which the weavers are preparing is extraordinarily magnificent. The whole city was talking of the splendid cloth which the emperor had ordered to be woven. Finally, the emperor himself wished to see the costly material while it was still in the loom. He took many officers of the court and the two honest men who had already admired the cloth. Two honest men, yes. As soon as the weavers saw the emperor approach, they went on working faster than ever, although they did not pass even one thread through the looms. Is not the work absolutely magnificent? Said the two officers already mentioned. If your majesty will only be pleased to look at it. What a splendid design. What glorious colors. And at the same time, they pointed to the empty frames, for they imagined that everyone else could see this exquisite piece of workmanship. You know what's funny? So, I was going to finish the story before I commented, but so, remember, you guys remember that deal on, it was going around mainly on Facebook, about the gold and, what was it, gold and white or blue and black dress, right? Okay. Yeah, right? So it was blue and black, Nate, not gold and white. Calm down. So, all right, so we will argue about that in a heartbeat, right? Like, if somebody says, oh, that's blue and black. So I was like, no, it's black and or gold and white or whatever the other colors were, right? So the ones that were wrong. So, but in this scenario, nobody was willing to argue about imaginary colors. So in other words, somebody says, oh, look, this is blue and purple and green and yellow. And somebody's going, man, I don't even see nothing there. But like I thought it'd be funny, like if somebody described it as colors one way and then another guy jumps in and he's like, no, it's these colors instead. And they're both making up colors, right? And then you get three or four people in there doing it. Anyway, I just thought that would be funny. And I feel like that's what we would do today. You know what I'm saying? So anyways. All right, so where is this? Okay, the emperor says, how is this? I can see nothing. This is indeed a terrible affair. Am I a simpleton or am I unfit to be emperor? That would be the worst thing that could happen. Oh, the cloth is charming, he said aloud. I approve of it completely. He smiled most graciously and looked at the empty looms. No way would he say he could not see what two of his advisors had praised so much. Even with the emperor now straining his own eyes, hoping to discover something on the looms, but he could see no more than the others. Nevertheless, they all exclaimed, oh, how beautiful, and advised his majesty to have some new clothes made from this splendid material for the parade that was planned. Magnificent, charming, excellent was called out on all sides. Everyone was very cheerful. The emperor was pleased. He presented the weavers with the emblem of an order of knighthood. The thieves set up the whole night before the day on which the parade was to take place. They had 16 lights burning so everyone could see how anxious they were to finish the new suit. They pretended to roll the cloth of the looms. They cut the air with their scissors and sewed with needles without any thread in them. See, they cried, at last the emperor's new clothes are ready. As I was just reading, I just thought of Fruit of the Loom underwear. Anyway, just thought it was funny. All right. The emperor, with all the grandees of his court, came to the weavers. The thieves raised their arms as if in the act of holding something up. Here are your majesty's trousers. Here is the scarf. Here is the mantle. The whole suit is as light as a cobweb. One might fancy he has nothing on at all when dressed in it. Yes, indeed, said all the courtiers, I don't know. Although not one of them could see anything of this special cloth. All right, this is taking way too long. So here's what happens. So it's taking longer than I thought. The king or the emperor, right? He puts on his clothes, but he's not really wearing any clothes. He's naked. And everybody is pretending that he is wearing these clothes. And so he goes out to the parade and he's walking down the parade and he's got the canopy over him and he's in front of his entire kingdom, right? And so they're all crying out, oh, how beautiful are the emperor's new clothes. What a magnificent train there is to the mantle, and how gracefully the scarf hangs. No one would admit these much admired clothes could not be seen, because in doing so, he would have been saying he was either a simpleton or he was unfit for his job. But the emperor has nothing on at all, said a little child. Listen to the voice of the child, exclaimed his father. What the child said was whispered from one to another. But he has nothing on at all, at last cried out all of the people. The emperor was upset, for he knew the people were right. However, he thought, the procession must go on now. The lords of the bedchamber took greater pains than ever to appear holding up a train, although in reality there was no train to hold, and the emperor walked on in his underwear. So that's interesting, right? So he's like, he finds out he's naked, and instead of being upset or instead of covering up or, you know, demanding clothes from one of his guys, he's just like, well, we're just going to keep the show going. We're going to pretend that I'm dressed. These guys are going to pretend they're carrying my clothes, and we're just going to keep this thing going, right? That's commitment. That's all I know. okay, so because of time, I'm not going to go into the history of this. I will just say, apparently there's a, I don't know if it was, yeah, I guess it was originally done in Danish, and it was Kæsarens Nye Klæder. I don't know. It's a literary folktale written by Danish author Hans Christian Andersen. It's been translated into over 100 languages. The Emperor's New Clothes was first published with The Little Mermaid in Denmark on April 7th, 1837, in the third and final installment of Andersen's Fairy Tales Told for Children. Okay, so that's just a little bit of history. All right, so let's skip all that. Okay, so obviously, this is a story about pride, okay, arrogance. Most people focus on the emperor's pride in this story, and rightfully so. But virtually every character in the story, outside of the child, has a pride issue. But let's start with the emperor. So from the very beginning, we can see the emperor's obsession with his outward appearance. It says he spent all of his money on clothes. He didn't care about his army. He didn't care about entertainment. All he cared about was showing off his clothes. So much so that he had a different outfit for every hour of the day. Sounds like a lot of women on Instagram, right? I had to throw that in there. The moment he heard about these splendid clothes, he had to have them. Why? In a word, stature. By having these uniquely beautiful clothes, he would cement himself as the emperor of fashion. And anyone who couldn't see or recognize the beauty of his clothing was automatically lower than him, or at least not as smart as him. I find it interesting he was worried from the beginning that he wouldn't be able to see the clothes. So at the very beginning, he sent two other people as test dummies first, because he was afraid of looking like he was dumb or that he was unfit for his own office. Only after his two test dummies reported back that they saw the beautiful clothes did he decide to go look for himself. He was so insecure about himself and so obsessed with his quest to be the next top model that he missed the obvious reality that there were no clothes. He even knighted the weavers for their job. So we can all agree that what happened after that was even more absurd. This man was obsessed with clothing. Again, he changed clothes every hour. So he knew, this guy knew more than anyone else, the feeling of putting on and taking off clothes. And yet, even though he was putting on nothing for the public parade, his ego would not allow him to admit that he was obviously naked. It wasn't until he was called out publicly by a child who didn't know any better that he realized he had been duped. And even still, he continued on as if nothing was wrong. Jesus dealt with leaders like this in the church, the religious leaders of his time, the Pharisees. In Matthew 23, we can see Jesus confront them about many things. when he calls out their focus on their outward appearance while ignoring who they were on the inside. It says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of greed and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, and then the outside will also be clean. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. So the Pharisees, like the emperor, neglected the importance of their character while trying to impress and prove their superiority over others. Yet they were even more egregious than the emperor in that they did it in the name of God. The emperor did it in the name of himself. We as Christians, especially those of us in leadership positions, must understand that the only reason we have any type of influence is because God has given it to us. The only reason we don't struggle with something that someone else does is because of God's grace. Not one of us is any better than another, and shame on anyone in leadership who acts like they are. Isaiah 61:10 says, "I delight greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in my God, for he has clothed me with garments of salvation and arrayed me in a robe of his righteousness, as a bridegroom adorns his head like a priest and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels." Yes, God does call leaders to a higher standard, but that higher standard is humility and servanthood, not pride and dominance. So now let's talk about the wise men that the emperor sent to scope out the clothing that was being made. The emperor trusted their opinions. However, it seems to me more that he valued them saying yes as opposed to how wise they were. In other words, he surrounded himself with people that would agree with his own wisdom, as opposed to those who would truly give him sound advice. It tells us that they were both smart enough to see that nothing was there, but they were dumb enough to act like there was. Even the officers the emperor took with him when he went to look at the clothes went on about how beautiful the empty looms were. They were afraid what the emperor would say if they told him the clothes didn't exist. In Proverbs, it talks about counsel, and it says, and there's a lot of verses, I only picked two. In 12:15, it says, "The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice." And in Proverbs 13:10, it says, "Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm." So apparently being a fool was as big of a problem then as it is now, because there's a lot of verses about it, okay? But while most of us read these scriptures from the perspective of the one who should be taking advice, I want to position it a little bit differently. Are you someone that a person would be wise to take advice from? Are you trustworthy? Are you dependable? Are you willing to speak the truth without fear of being rebuked? If you were one of the king's trusted advisors, would you have told him that there were no clothes? We would all like to say yes, I'm sure. But just as important as it is for us to seek godly counsel and advice, it is important for us to be prepared to give it as well when asked. Now, at the beginning of the story, it says that all of the people heard about the wonderful clothes, and they were eager to learn how wise or foolish their neighbors might be. Today, we don't need clothes to do that. We just see who's participating in the latest TikTok challenge, right? Yeah, exactly. Tide Pods, anyone? Oh, Nathan says they taste like cinnamon. Okay, good to know, good to know. Now, the people didn't actually get to see the clothing until the big reveal at the parade. But even then, they all cheered and cried out how amazing the clothes were, because they couldn't stand the idea that their neighbor could see the clothes and they couldn't. They acted foolish because they didn't want to be fools. How ironic is that, right? There you go. Okay, now, this is the best part. This is where my notes cut off on here. So, all right. So, last but not least, I'll back up. So, I didn't put it in here, but the thieves, right? The weavers, okay? So, the posers, the pretenders, trying to say that they're something that they're not. They weren't even legitimately trying. It wasn't like they went to the king and they positioned themselves as having more talent than what they actually had, and they were trying their best. I mean, it flat out said these guys were just thieves. So their entire purpose was to go and deceive the king because they knew, what did it say at the beginning? The king spent all of his money on his clothes. So they knew, or emperor, sorry. So they knew if they could get to the emperor and they could convince him to special order their amazing clothes, that he would basically probably pay them whatever they wanted. And so they saw him as an easy mark to be able to come in and steal his riches. Does that make sense? Right? Okay. So I guess that's kind of a pride thing. I don't really know. But it's I feel like in this story, the weavers were used as the mechanic to expose the pride of the emperor, his followers, the people, etc. Does that make sense? So I feel like that was their role in this story. And then you have the child, and the child doesn't know any better. The child is innocent, the child is young, and the child's like, hey, he doesn't have any clothes on, people. Like, what are you talking about, right? And so that child refused to be gaslit, right? Okay. It's like, what are y'all crazy? The guy's not wearing any clothes. So then it only took, you'll notice, took one person to shine light on the truth, and all of a sudden everybody was like, oh, we can admit that there's nothing there. Because the kid, he doesn't know any better, and he's not seeing anything there, and I'm not seeing anything there. There must not be anything there, right? So once it was exposed by somebody who was willing to tell the truth, who wasn't concerned about what everyone else thought, then it was exposed, and then everyone was able to come out and say it. And so, man, I don't have any of my references or anything. Okay, well, so the point being that in life, first of all, we have to be willing, as the emperor, okay, to have our eyes open, to not put ourselves in such a lofty position that we feel like the truth would set us back. If we're advisors, if someone's asking for our opinion, we should have the fortitude to tell them the truth, to give them wise and godly counsel. And just in our everyday lives around everyone else, we need to be authentic. We need to be real, and we need to not be so concerned with the stature of ourselves compared to our neighbors. It's so easy. I bring up social media again because it's just this avenue. It's so easy to see what everyone else has and what everyone else is doing. And everyone else's life is so amazing and so much better than ours. Of course, we're only seeing what they want us to see at that point, right? So we never actually truly see what's going on. But so often we just get so caught up in trying to compare ourselves to other people instead of trying to figure out who we are in God, what he has for us, and give credit to him for anything that we would take and consider ourselves as lofty. Does that make sense? So, JT, you had your hand up.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, after the kid, you know, said, hey, he's not wearing anything, and everybody else admitted it too. It was funny because the king, he knew it too. And he said, I'm just going to keep going with it.
And he just kept going.
The thing about that, it just speaks to the fact that we all know what's right and we know what's wrong, right? We know it deep down in our gut, especially if you're a believer. You know what's right and you know what's wrong. The fact of the matter is that he kept doing it anyway speaks to another thing, like you said, his ego and other things that he suppressed it. So it really took an actual effort for him to just dismiss the truth and go with the lie, right? And I think it speaks to us as believers. We have to stop pushing down the truth when we know it's wrong. We know exactly what we're doing. Okay, this is not the right thing, but I'm going to ignore it anyway because I want this, this, and this, right? And so it's just interesting. And then when he's called out, he's like, dang, well, I got to keep up the facade instead of just coming clean and saying, you know what, you're right. This it's been exposed. Let me go ahead and just get with it. He keeps trying to live up to the lie. And I think that just speaks to a lot of what happens in society because nobody wants to be wrong. You know, even when we know we're wrong, we still don't want to be wrong.
Right.
So it's just interesting, that part of the story.
Well, and so when you talk about truth, and so that's another point I wanted to bring up, I actually forgot to bring up, is that, so in today's society, there's this overwhelming, I guess, idea that truth is relative, right? So, hey, speak your truth. I'm going to speak my truth. It doesn't make any sense, right? So, but the thing is that there are so many of us that aren't willing to stand up against that, right? We're like, hey, let everybody say whatever they want to say. Hey, it's fine. It doesn't. And again, it's the Bible talks about doing this in love, but speak truth in love. And we can't accept people saying, okay, well, you know, whatever you believe is fine, whatever I believe is fine. I mean, yes, everybody has a right to believe what they believe, but that doesn't make it true. There is an objective truth in almost everything. And so we have to be bold enough to say, hey, I mean, you can believe whatever you want, but that doesn't make it true. This is truth. It's absolute. Because we're moving farther and farther away from that. And when you get to a point where there is no objective truth, it's chaos. That's all you're going to have. Dylan?
More to what you said, truth, God is truth. So everything, if you just compare it to a biblical worldview, it'll all line up. But
absolutely.
The scripture, I thought, fit real well with what you were talking about. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man. And it goes on, Romans 1, 22 through 32. I love the C.S. Lewis, liar, lunatic, or lord. Like, if you have, so there's a lot of people.
He's got to be one of the three.
Exactly. Yeah. So everybody, every agnostic, sometimes atheist, will say, "Hey, yes, Jesus was a good man," and you can put that ball in their court and say, "Okay, you believe Jesus existed." Okay, and then quote him when he says, "I'm the only way to the Father." It forces them, even if it's not that day right then, later they will have to make a choice. It might be 10 years later, like a buddy of mine that recently came to Christ after 10 years of atheism. But they have to face that truth. They believe that Jesus exists in their heart, that they can't get around that. But I like that. This is cool what you did, and I thought that scripture fit pretty well with that.
No, it does. It fits perfectly. And yeah, Jesus said, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me." And so, like you said, he's one of three things. Either he's a liar, right? So he's not a good man at all because he's just lying. He's like the thieves in the story, for the most part, right? So he's either a liar, he's a lunatic, meaning he's not doing it on purpose, but he's crazy, or three, he's God, right? So you've got to pick one of the three and reconcile that. There is no, well, you know, you can believe what you believe and you believe what you believe. Something has to be true, right? And so there is a truth regardless of what you believe. Yes, sir?
Kind of piggyback on what Dylan said. Here's the area that we can't be silent in. If you have acquaintances, friends, that are not part of the church, and they give an opening to you. I'm not talking about running around preaching and being moralistic on top of people and all that. But if they ever say, "Well, I feel like I'm all right with God," that's a key for you to say, "Why do you feel that way?" And I want to tell you something. My personal opinion, some Christians need to be told, you're not all right with God. You don't have any clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
Your works are your clothes, and really you're naked. If you don't understand that you have to be clothed in Christ, that's your salvation. I don't care what church you go to. I don't care how much you speak in tongues. I don't care what you do with all your wonderful works. It's nothing if you haven't accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as your covering and your clothes. Because we're all just running around naked.
Right.
I had that dream. I may have told that, but I had a dream, a big portion of my ministry when I was younger, about being in church naked. I was in my underwear. But I was so ashamed. And I finally talked to Brother Ira. I said, what is this dream? I mean, I'm in the middle of a huge congregation. He said, I'll tell you what the dream is. It's that you're dependent upon your own works as your covering when you're supposed to be covered in Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was my faith sincere? Absolutely. Did I have a relationship with the Lord? Yes, I did. But in my thought process, it was about what good deeds I was doing to bring righteousness about, rather than the fact that I was born into Christ in righteousness, and then I'm working out those things as he gives them to me. But my covering never came from me to begin with. It's always from Christ.
Exactly. Well, so one thing I will comment is you're extremely lucky. Because anytime I ever dream that I'm naked, I'm naked, right? And it's embarrassing, okay? So at least you had underwear on, right? So that's good. I thought that was funnier than everyone else did. Liz?
I wanted to speak to something that you touched on, that how the attitude, or maybe the, I don't know, it's not really attitude, trickles down.
Right.
From the top.
Mm-hmm.
You can go into a business and you can tell if the management is good or not by the way that the clerks or the waiters and waitresses or whatever treat you. If they are happy, if they are do their work well, that also you can tell that at the top that trickles down. And this emperor surrounded himself with yes men,
mm-hmm.
because he didn't want to have himself challenged, or he didn't want to improve. And we have to be careful, like you said, not to be like the emperor. We need to surround ourselves with people that will tell us the truth, even the hard truths when we don't want to hear it.
Absolutely.
And we have to not get mad and take it personal, but we have to take it in and let it change us. So...
That's right. We have to both be open.
Oh.
We have to both be open to hearing truth, and we have to be open to sharing and giving truth, right? Dylan, did you have something
else? Yeah, one more thing. A believer customer of mine gave me a stack of these. It's a great opening. And like Dad said, if there's an opening, some people just aren't ready. But it's $1,000 or $1 million bills. No. Yeah, $1 million bills. And there's a list of questions on there. And especially with people that profess Christianity but have zero fruits, it's a real good way to get common ground too. And you ask them the $1 million question, are you saved? And then there's a list on there that you can go down and they can read later, and it goes through the commandments basically. Have you ever lied? Have you ever? And then you know the common ground is, I'm constantly having to seek out my own salvation with fear and trembling. It's a process. And it makes them recognize that they're lost,
yeah.
because
right.
of the, have you know, go through the list. If you've done this, then you need God, you need fellowship,
absolutely.
Blah, blah, blah. But it's not you pointing out that they are like, hey, I've done all these things and try not to do them constantly, but you have to work at it. And it's just a good witnessing tool.
Absolutely. That's 100% true. All right, well, we're over time. Thank you, guys. Appreciate all of your participation this morning. And, yeah, that's it. That's all I got.